Hi, welcome to AzureConf. This is a community-based event that we've been running a couple times now, and you're going to see sessions held throughout the day from members of the community that have used Azure. They're going to be able to tell you how to use it, some of their experiences, how to build great solutions with it. And the great thing is, because it's from the community, you can ask any questions during it, and they're going to share the good, the bad, and the ugly, and hopefully give you throughout the day a really good overview of kind of what you can do with Azure and how you can be really successful with it. I'm going to kick off AzureConf this morning by providing kind of an overview of Windows Azure. So for people that are new to Windows Azure, can get kind of an update in terms of what it all provides, as well as for people that have used Windows Azure in the past, get an update in terms of some of the features that we've recently shipped, and get kind of an overview end-to-end of what the platform provides. We think there's a lot of stuff to take advantage of, a lot of great content throughout this day, and we're really looking forward to having the opportunity to speak with you. In terms of the format of today, as I mentioned, there's lots of different live sessions. One of the cool things about it being a live session, if you're watching it right now live, is that you can ask questions along the way. And so below the video player that you're watching right now, there's a little text box that allows you to ask questions. Those get routed to us, and they show up on a screen right in front of me here. And so if you have a question at any point during my talk or in the later live sessions throughout the day, feel free to ask that question. And we'll try to answer it at the appropriate time during the talk. And we'll try to answer as much of it, as many of the questions as we can throughout the day, and hopefully give an opportunity to have kind of a nice live participation with everyone watching. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. And I'm going to walk you through a little bit about what Windows Azure is and what it provides. So at a high level, Windows Azure is Microsoft's cloud platform. It's a platform that we launched for the first time about 2 years ago. And it provides a wealth of functionality and capabilities that you can take advantage of. A couple of things that it really kind of, I think, is provides in a unique way is that it's super flexible. It's designed so that you can run any type of workload within it. We support both Windows as well as Linux-based solutions. It's designed so that you can take advantage of what we call infrastructure as a service, which enables private virtual machines as well as virtual networking, so that you can build solutions effectively by taking any virtual machines that you already have, moving them to the cloud, and integrating them to be cloud capable. We also then support a number of what we call platform as a service capabilities. And these basically are managed services that we deliver that you can take advantage of and code against, and where we handle things like patching, availability, and other types of capabilities. And the great thing about Windows Azure is you can use the best of Windows, the best of Linux. You can take the best of infrastructure as a service and the best of platform as a service, and you can merge them all together and really build some amazing solutions with it. I mentioned earlier how we support not only Windows but Linux. That's just one example of some of the openness that we support with Windows Azure. We also support multiple programming languages. We support developing on Windows as well as developing on Macs and Linux machines. And all of our SDKs for Windows Azure are released under an Apache 2 license and are actually hosted on GitHub. And so we really try to take openness from whether it's a language or an operating system or a protocol perspective across the board, really take it to a new level. And then lastly, with Windows Azure, we provide a very solid computing platform. We basically run all our own data centers, and they're really robust run solutions. And we've kind of designed the overall platform so that you can build solutions that can deliver high available capabilities to your customers with great confidence. And I'll talk a little bit about that throughout the sessions, throughout the content here today, about some of the ways that we do that. But hopefully the end result is you have great confidence in terms of delivering the value you need to your customers and deliver a great experience. In terms of kind of where Windows Azure lives around the world, I mentioned we have multiple data centers spread out across the world. And one of the things that we enable you to do as a developer building solutions for Windows Azure is to choose where in the world you want to run that solution. And so we have a number of what we call regions around the world where we allow you to basically deploy your apps and take advantage of our full feature set of capabilities. And we have 8 regions around the world today. We have 2 in Asia, we have 4 in North America, and we have 2 in Europe. And we're going to see a lot more regions opening up over the next 6 to 12 months in many other parts of the world as well. For example, we recently announced we're opening 2 regions within China. We already have 1 in Hong Kong, but we're actually opening up 2 within mainland China near Beijing and Shanghai. We're actually going to be the first cloud provider to actually offer cloud services within the China mainland. We also then have a number of what we call edge regions around the world, where our content delivery network and our overall networking services interoperate. And so you might be running, for example, an app in Europe, but you could choose to use our CDN or content delivery network in Asia in order to make sure that the Asian experience when visiting your site is as fast as possible. And all these features are nicely integrated and you can take advantage of. A lot of people often ask me, so what does a data center actually look like, which is a good question. And so what I thought I'd do is actually just show a quick view of actually what inside an Azure data center looks like so that you can actually get a sense of how it operates. And so I'm just going to play a quick video here. And what you might be able to see, hopefully, is inside of a data center, we've got hundreds of thousands of servers. We typically put them in containers. We have very strong people that work in our data centers. You can see dragging one of the containers in. And basically what we do is we wire up power and cooling to all these different containers, and then it's a completely lights out facility, meaning we don't actually do any manual. When you deploy an app, there's no one running around the data center doing anything. Instead, we send REST calls to our data center. It basically handles everything else. And from that point on, you as a developer have complete control over those resources. And that enables you, again, not only complete control, but a lot of power, because it means that you can spin up and spin down resources pretty much at will, and enables a very, very flexible model for you as a developer to take advantage of. The other really nice thing about Windows Azure is the pricing model behind it. We enable a model we call pay only for what you use, which literally means you pay only for what you actually use. And that enables, again, a number of kind of great benefits for you as a developer. What this means is there's no minimum. You don't actually have to pay a monthly minimum in order to sign up for Azure. You can sign up and pay zero forever, in fact, and still take advantage of some of those capabilities. And then basically when you deploy an app or you use specific features, we then enable you to pay, again, only for those resources that you use. So for example, if you use a gigabyte of storage, you only pay for that 1 gigabyte of storage, even though it's actually deployed on servers that have petabytes of storage available to it. Again, this pricing model and the ability to kind of only pay for what you use ends up being very, very flexible. It means there's no upfront costs, and you can really scale your price that you have to pay based on the actual usage that your app is getting, which enables a very nice return on investment. Other nice thing about kind of this overall pay-as-you-go model is for things like compute resources. So in other words, a virtual machine or a website or a mobile service where you're actually running code that you upload. One of the nice things that we enable you to do is pay only for the hours that you use. So it doesn't mean that you're actually paying for a machine during the month. You can actually pay for just the hours during the month that you actually run that machine. And again, that makes a nice level of granularity so that if you are doing dev test, as an example, and you want to spin up virtual machines in order to run test runs against it and then tear down those machines when they're done, you're only actually having to pay for those machines during the hours that they're actually running. If you're not doing anything on the weekend with them, if you're not doing it during the nights with them, or even during parts of the day, you're not actually going to have to pay for that those resources. Instead, you're only paying for when they're active and that you're actually consuming them. So that's kind of a quick kind of overview, if you will, of Windows Azure at a high level. The rest of this talk, we're going to dive deep into some of the features and actually do a bunch of demos and kind of walk through them in a lot more depth. First set of features I want to walk through is a new set of capabilities that we just released in what we call general availability form last week, and that is our infrastructure as a service capabilities, which is specifically virtual machines and virtual networking. And this is a great new feature of Windows Azure. It, again, allows you to basically run any workload you want within Azure. We support both Windows Server as well as Linux-based operating systems that you can deploy there. We support a variety of different machine sizes that you can deploy your apps to. So for example, you could run an extra small VM, which basically uses only about 500 megs of RAM. Or you can now run in some of our new larger size machines that we launched last week, including our new 26 gig and 56 gig of RAM systems that provide much more core processing power as well as much more memory. And again, the beauty is when you're deploying these virtual machines, you can choose the machine size you want to deploy to and literally within minutes have a full environment stood up for you to use. They are just running the standard operating system. So that means anything that runs in Windows or anything that runs in Linux pretty much just works. You don't need to rewrite your apps in many cases. And because it's just using the standard operating system, existing frameworks or existing other tools that are already out there, you can incorporate and take advantage of in a very easy way. And what's nice about the virtual machines is you can use them completely standalone in the cloud, but you can also integrate them into what we call virtual private networks. And a virtual private network basically means you could create your own address space if you want to, your own subnet rules if you wanted to. And you could take multiple machines in the cloud and have them be isolated from other machines using that virtual private network. We also support the ability for you to take that virtual private network and connect it to an on-premise environment. So if you already have, for example, a corporate network environment, you can VPN and tunnel between them so that the machines that you host inside Windows Azure in the cloud just look like they're part of your corporate network on-premise. And again, that makes it very, very flexible for you to integrate multiple environments and enable what we call hybrid solutions. So with that, let's go ahead and show some demos and walk through how you can take advantage of this new functionality. So to do this, I'm going to go to the Azure.com website, which you can see up here behind me. And this website provides a bunch of information in terms of how to get started, some of the features that we provide. It also provides pricing information, so if you want to learn about how much any of these machines are going to cost, you can go ahead and select any of these things. And so, for example, with virtual machines here, I could select it. You'll notice that we have pricing for both Windows and Linux. And so for Windows, down here, pricing starts at about 2 cents per hour per month, which is about $15 a month. And that's if you pay by the hour. We also have what we call commitment plans, where if you do want to provide an upfront amount of money, that you kind of say, I'm going to use at least $200 or at least $500, we'll give you a discount on top of that per hour rate. And so typically what we see a lot of people start with a pay-as-you-go hourly rate, and then once they know they're going to use at least a minimum set of resources, they often convert it to that prepaid plan, and they get a much bigger discount off of that hourly rate going forward. We also then have pricing for Linux, and so you can see here, here's the Linux rates. Our Linux pricing is actually cheaper than our Windows pricing, and we actually match for both Windows and Linux pretty much all the other competitors out there in the market. So Windows Azure is as cheap or often cheaper in terms of cost than pretty much everyone else out there. We also then provide what we call SQL Server and BizTalk Server pricing. And so one of the things that you can do when you're working with Windows Azure is you can bring your own licenses. So if you've already bought SQL Server, within your organization, you can upload it and run it inside our virtual machines. You don't need to rebuy it. What we also then support, though, is per hour pricing of Windows SQL Server. So if you want to run a SQL database and you haven't bought a SQL license for it yet, you can spin one up and you can basically, whether it's the Web Standard Enterprise Edition, you can use it in the cloud and only basically pay that per hour rate. And once you tear it down, the billing stops. That's true also for BizTalk Server. So very easy way for you to go ahead and learn about the pricing on our website. There's documentation so that you can get started and learn about some of the different things that you can do with it. And we have different dev centers for different languages and frameworks available that you can learn more. And then once you want to give it a try, all you need to do is just go ahead and click the free trial button. And within about 3 minutes, you can sign up be able to kind of start taking advantage of Windows Azure. And there's a no-obligation trial that lasts for 3 months. And so all the demos I'm going to be doing here today, including the virtual machine demo, which I'm about to start, you can do with a free trial yourself. And it's a great way that, again, you can, with no obligation, no need to pay anything, you can go ahead and try out everything I'm about to do. Once you sign in, then, basically you just click the portal link, and you'll dive into an admin portal that looks a little bit like this one here. And what this provides is a way for you to see all the different resources that you're using within Windows Azure. And it provides a nice, clean way for you to go ahead and manage them. And so what I'm going to do here is, you'll notice I have a bunch of resources already created. You're going to see a lot of these demos throughout the day with me using them. But I thought I'd start by just walking through that new virtual machine capability that I just talked about and explain how you can take advantage of it with Windows Azure. So to create a new resource in Windows Azure, all you need to do is go to down here and hit the new button, which will show a nice little pop-up here. And this lets me go ahead and create lots of different types of resources, as you can see here, that I can use. So I can create websites, virtual machines, mobile services, cloud services. I could create a Hadoop cluster, I could create a SQL database, and so forth. And we're going to walk through a lot of these ones throughout the day, so we're not going to drill too much into them now. What I'm going to start out with, though, is just creating a virtual machine. You'll notice a lot of the features still have preview tags on them. That means that they're available in preview form. So they're not generally released, but you can still use them. Things that don't have a preview, like the virtual machine, those are actually available in production form. And as I mentioned again, last week we released our virtual machine support as generally available, so it's now provided with an SLA full production support. So what I'm going to do here is just click on this virtual machine, and you'll see it's really easy to get started with one. I could just go ahead and say Skyku test VM. I can pick what operating system or what machine image I want to use here. And you can see we have many different image types. I can choose what size machine I want to run. So again, I could say I want to run a small system, or I could go all the way up to an 8-core 56 gig system. I can specify a username I want to use and a password. And then I can specify where in the world I want to run it. So for example, I could choose to run it in West Europe, I could choose to run it in the US or in Asia, and I can then choose what kind of what we call subscription I want to run it on. In this case here, I'm going to use my MSDN benefits, which is something that if you're an MSDN customer, you can take advantage of. It gives you some free Azure resources that you can use at no extra charge. It's just included as part of your MSDN. And then when I'm done, all I have to do is click Create. And this is going to go ahead now and spin up that virtual machine using the settings, the username and password that I specified in that West Europe region, in this case, that I specified here. And in about 4 to 5 minutes, I'll be able to log into this virtual machine and do anything I want with it. So that's how easy it is to get started and to create a new one of these. If I want to, I can also go ahead and click New and use this From Gallery option. This enables you to do some more custom capabilities. So you'll see you've got a nice gallery so I can learn more about the images. And again, you can see we have both Linux as well as Windows. We have SharePoint, we have BizTalk, we have SQL. You'll notice as we kind of drill into this wizard here, I also, in the gallery option, have a few extra options which are pretty neat. One is I can actually choose which service pack or which monthly Patch Tuesday update version of the OS I want to deploy. So in this case here, I'm just going to use the most recent one that's been released. I can go ahead again and name it. Give the same settings that I had earlier. This wizard also, though, allows a few extra options. So for example, it lets me create both a standalone virtual machine, or if I want to, I can start to take multiple virtual machines and put them together into a single deployment. So that's another nice option that I can take advantage of. So for example, if I wanted to, I could go ahead and say I want to add it to an existing Skyku website deployment that I already have. I can choose things like storage accounts and so forth. I can also define what's called an availability set. This is a pretty cool feature that allows me when I have multiple virtual machines put together, to indicate that I want to have these virtual machines run on separate racks and on separate server nodes within the data center. And this gives me more redundancy as I'm building my solution, so that if a complete hardware failure happened to occur, it wouldn't only take out a subset of my machines. So I can use this to kind of make sure I have load balancing and have redundancy in place throughout my deployment. Setting that up would be really easy. All I'd need to do is say, let's create a web availability set, add 2 or 3 machines into that, and then that way, again, Azure will make sure that those machines are distributed across the data center on separate power supplies, separate racks, and so forth, so that I have more redundancy. Other nice thing about the availability set is if we ever need to, or when we need to service the host, meaning like we need to install a patch or something like that, we'll make sure that we only do it in one machine at a time within an availability set, so that you wouldn't ever have all your machines go down at the same time. So a great feature to take advantage of. I can use that in order to do some more custom options. Everything I do through the portal can also be completely driven through a REST API or through PowerShell or Bash scripts that we support as well. So you can completely automate it as well. Once a virtual machine is created, I can then, within the portal, easily drill into it and get a nice dashboard view that gives me information about the health of the machine, the settings and the configurations of it, and how I can go ahead and take advantage of it. And so, for example, you'll see here in a moment, I can see my dashboard health statistics around my virtual machine. I can see the memory, network in and network out. This virtual machine happens to be running my skygoo.com blog site that I actually use to host a lot of the old images on my blog. You can see a whole bunch of information about that. One of the neat things about it is I can also go ahead and click this connect button down here. Portal will then download for me an RDP configuration file. And then I can go ahead here and very easily RDP into this instance. At this point, I'm a full administrator on that machine. So the benefit here is I can use, again, either remote PowerShell or, in this case here, remote desktop to be an admin on the machine. So here is my skygoo.com server. I'm now a full administrator on the machine. I've RDP'd into it. I can install any software I want in this machine. If it reboots, it'll still be there when it comes back. The beauty here is now I have a virtual machine in the cloud. I can map any DNS name to. I can do anything I want within it. So it makes it really easy for me to manage, set up, and it's just familiar. It looks just like my standard Windows machines here that I can go ahead and use. One thing you'll notice also the machines when you set up is that you can have multiple disks attached to them. Now, how does this work? Well, we don't actually plug in disks in the data center directly when you create a disk, but what you can do is create effectively a virtual disk that we will create for you and map to that machine. And all you do to do that, again, it's command line, or you can go into the portal and just say attach an empty disk, give it a size. We have a couple caching options you can specify, and then if you click OK, this would go ahead and create for me another drive on this machine, and then within the machine it would just look like a standard volume, and I could format it using NTFS or ext3 or 4 if it was Linux, and use it just as a normal device. And so right here you can see I have a data drive that I've already mounted on this machine. Here is my blog content I uploaded, and it just looks and is effectively a device to that machine that I can read and write to using the standard read-write APIs that I already know. So a really easy way that I can go both create machines, attach disks to them. If I want to, I can map endpoints. So there's a firewall around the machines by default. I can add new ports or endpoints that I want to open up. And then one of the things I can do if I have multiple machines is I can do automatic load balancing across those endpoints. So that if I had two virtual machines, I could say send half the HTTP traffic here, half the HTTP traffic there. And if either of those machines went down, the load balancer would automatically send the remaining traffic to the live machines. So all these features are built in. They're all included in the virtual machine price. And again, it's all pay as you go. So it's a very flexible, easy model that you can use. So a couple questions, a couple people have as I mentioned earlier, you can ask questions on the website and they get fed into here for me. A couple questions here. George asked a question, is Azure suitable for hosting multiple websites, either on Linux or Windows VMs? The answer is yes. You can definitely host multiple websites. The beauty is it's a virtual machine. So you can literally run IIS or Apache or whatever you want in there, and you can absolutely host multiple websites as part of that. You'll see a little bit later on in this presentation, we also have a great websites feature that I'll talk about, where you don't even have to manage your own virtual machines. We do that for you provide a lot of flexibility and rich offers for that. But you absolutely can do that within virtual machines as well. Dennis asked a question, which is, if creating a SQL Server VM from the gallery is the only cost, the cost of running the virtual machine, and there's no licensing cost for SQL Server. It's a good question, Dennis. The licensing cost, if you create with the Windows virtual machine template, is just Windows. There's no SQL licensing cost as part of that. If you use the SQL Server VM template, then you are going to be charged both the Windows VM as well as the SQL VM license. If you already have a SQL Server license, then what you probably want to do instead is just create a Windows VM template, install SQL into it, and if you want to, you can create your own image that you can add to your own private gallery of that image, and then use that template. And that avoids any cost other than paying the standard hourly price for Windows within Azure. Hexter asked a question about ISO 27001. compliance. We are now, and we have actually been for a while, ISO compliant within Windows Azure. So we do have, from a compliance perspective, that. We also, on the compliance front, do allow you to get a HIPAA certificate if you're focusing on healthcare. And we have various other government regulations and compliance metrics across Azure. If you go to the Windows Azure website, there's a Trust Center that you can visit that details all of those compliance capabilities in more depth. Lawrence Maroney asked a question: if a virtual machine is running a website, does it spin up every time a user hits it, or is it online 100%? When you create a virtual machine, by default, it's going to be online 100% unless you stop it. So for example, you'll see that my status here on these virtual machines is running. That one we created earlier, it looks like, is now deployed inside the West Europe. That basically means it's running 24/7. I can stop it or shut it down if I want to, at which point it'll stop. Eric Smith asked a question: are stop VMs still being billed? Right now they are. So if you stop a VM, we'll bill it, but if you delete it, then we obviously stop billing it. One of the things we are going to make a change for not too distant future, so when you stop a VM, there's zero billing. So you can keep it deployed, but not running, and there'll be no charge. But that's not true today, but it will be in the not too distant future. Until then, if you want to stop a VM and avoid billing, you'd stop it and then delete it, and then there'd be no billing from that point on. Let's see, a couple other questions here. Kevin asked a question: can we allocate multiple public IPs to a virtual machine? Right now, our virtual machines have a separate IP, so we don't allow you to map multiple public IPs, although we do allow you to have a separate private IP, obviously, to each machine. What you can do, though, is we do certainly support port mapping. So if you have multiple virtual machines, you can do port mapping so that each one has a separate port. So that is for certain solutions, like, say, a database, or for like a NoSQL solution. What we typically find is people will just use different ports as opposed to separate IPs for mapping that. Multiple IP per VM is something that we're looking to add in the future as well. A couple other questions people ask: is it possible to deploy Hyper-V machines created locally to Windows Azure? Which is a great question. One of the cool things about how Windows Azure works is it actually runs on top of Windows Server 2012. So at the base level, the host operating system level on top of all of our server nodes, we're actually running the same operating system that you're running or can run in your own data centers. And our virtualization capability that we use with Windows Azure is based on Hyper-V. It is just Hyper-V. And what this enables is something we call virtual machine portability, which is kind of the question that was asked here. What this means is that you can go ahead and very easily create a virtual machine inside your own on-premise environment and then upload it into Windows Azure and boot it up. You don't need to import or export. It's literally the same BHD file format that you would run on your Windows 8 machine or on your Windows Server machines. And so you can configure it and then basically just upload the file and boot it up inside Windows Azure. Likewise, that image that I just created earlier, I could download from Windows Azure and boot up on my local machines as well. And so I absolutely have full portability across those two environments. And better yet, if I had another hoster that was running Windows Server with Hyper-V as well, I could also have the flexibility so I could take that virtual machine and I can migrate it to that hoster environment and have them run it there as well. So again, the beauty and the flexibility of all this is that I can basically move my VMs around from multiple environments. I have no lock-in because I can actually run them anywhere. And that gives you kind of a variety of great capabilities that you can take advantage of. A couple of questions here that a few people asked is, so how does that work? So one of the things you can do here is you'll notice I have an images depot that I can create here, and I can have multiple disks. So here's an example of some of the disks that I'm storing here. For all of our virtual machine instances, both the actual operating system instance as well as the data drives that I create are stored in our Azure Storage Blob system, which I'll talk more about a little bit later on. But what this means is if I use a tool, I'm going to use a free tool here called Cloud Explorer that you can download from the web, you can actually drill into any of your storage accounts. And you can actually click on, in this case here, my VHD subfolder within one of my storage accounts. And you can see here a whole bunch of images blobs that I'm using for a variety of EHDs. And some of these are VMs that I'm already running, or still running. For example, my SkyGoo website that we RDP'd in, you can see it right here. I also then have other images for past VMs that I've created, where I've deleted the VM, so I'm no longer being paid for it, it's no longer deployed, but I've kept the VHD around so that if I wanted to, I could quickly recreate it in the future. Again, I'm just storing these in blob storage inside the Windows Azure Storage System. You'll notice if I zoom in here, all of the extensions are .vhd. These are just standard VHD files, same that I could run on my local on-premise. And so if I wanted to take my SkyGoo website VM and run it on my Windows client machine, I could literally just right-click and hit download, and it would download that VM locally. I can then just boot it up using Hyper-V on-premise. And likewise, if I had one on-premise, I could just copy it in here and upload it. And then once it's uploaded, I could go in the portal and create a new virtual machine based on that VHD image. So very, very easy way to import, export. And the beauty is it's just a standard VHD file. Other thing about these VHD files that's worth mentioning, you'll notice the size here for a lot of these says 30 gigs. That's how big the VHD is logically. The way our pricing works, though, on the storage system is we only bill you for what you actually use. So if you have a 30 gig partition in your OS drive, but you've only used 5 gigs of it, we'll only charge you for 5 gigs. And so it's also a nice feature about how our system works. You only pay, again, for what you use. You don't have to pay for that full OS image size. Someone asked a question. Are there transaction costs? Angel asked this question about, since they're based on blob storage, is there a transaction cost? There are some transaction costs. The way it basically works, though, is that it's pennies per millions of I.O. transactions. And so in general, what we find, unless you're just completely hammering the disk, that rounds out to kind of being pennies per month and doesn't typically amount to much. We do provide, as part of our billing system, a way that you can actually see how much each VM is using, each storage account, and from a transaction perspective, so you can analyze it if you need to. But in general, we've tried to structure the pricing on the transaction front for virtual machines so that hopefully, except in extreme I.O. cases, that typically does not amount to much. So that's a little bit in terms of how we use on the storage system. Let me talk a little bit more about some of the storage mechanics and about how this blob storage system that we use within Windows Azure kind of functions, because there's a bunch of neat things as part of that. One of the things that the way our storage system works in Windows Azure is we basically provide for you an abstraction where it looks like we give you a storage account that you can read and write things into. And in the case of virtual machines, you can create drives that look just like regular devices that you'd attach to a Windows or Linux-based operating system that you can read and write to. Under the covers, though, it's actually a fairly sophisticated piece of machinery. We basically have clusters that are full of disks. And so you can see sort of a pseudo cluster I have here on the diagram. And when a virtual machine effectively says, I want a new drive or I want to attach a drive, we actually use multiple of those disks in order to assemble what looks like to the virtual machine like a device. And one of the things that we're always careful about is we make sure that we replicate the data into at least three locations or on three separate drives within that cluster. And what that means is that if one of those drives ever runs into a problem or goes bad, we always have two other copies. And the way the storage system works is it can automatically fail over to the other copies so that the virtual machine never even knows that there was an issue. Likewise, if lots of people are using different drives, our storage system also is smart enough about load balancing the traffic so that we can also offer a much more consistent I.O. performance to all the virtual machines that are attached. Other cool thing about how this storage system works is that it's not only reliable and always on within a data center, but it also is designed so that if there ever was a data center-wide issue, like for example a meteor came out of the sky and hit the data center, we want to provide a way that your storage can be replicated somewhere else. And so by default, when you create a storage account, we'll actually do what's called geo-replicate it to another data center that's at least 500 miles away. And what that means is as your VM is reading and writing to the disk, it's copying the three locations in real time within the same data center. And then the background will basically replicate it to another data center at least 500 miles away. And there's some latency on that copy, so it's not in real time. But we basically guarantee, I think within about 15 minutes, that your data that you write is somewhere else. And so again, this provides a nice peace of mind and a nice disaster recovery capability in the event of a worst case disaster. So that's a little bit about virtual machines, and hopefully provides a little bit of context in terms of how you can go ahead and use them to really get kind of any existing solution that you have built up and running pretty quickly within Azure. The beauty is they're just standard Windows and Linux for VMs, so you can install anything that you already have pretty much within them, and they're really designed to kind of enable you to reuse as much of your existing assets as possible. Again, you saw with the VHDs, I can import and export them between on-premise Windows Server and Azure. I can also use the virtual networking capabilities to stitch together kind of a what looks like a single network across both those types of environments. And if I'm using System Center or existing tools to manage them, I can also use those, again, across both environments. Moving on, I want to talk about another new capability that we have currently in preview, but that we're hoping to kind of GA also relatively soon, something we call websites. And what websites do is it's an example of, I mentioned earlier, one of these platforms of service-like capabilities where instead of you managing your own virtual machine, we instead provide for you a managed service where we do a lot of that management for you. So for example, we do the OS patching for you. We handle availability and the load balancers and do all that work and setup for you so that you can really focus much more on your app as opposed to the infrastructure required to run that app. And with websites, we basically provide a nice way that you can host web apps and websites. You can build them with ASP.NET, Node, PHP. We also now just added Python support recently. So you can use a variety of different technologies and languages. We allow you to deploy in seconds using whether it's FTP, you can also use Git or TFS. In order to enable source control deployment. We also recently added Dropbox support. So if you just want to copy things into your Dropbox account, you can automatically sync them to Azure and have them be live. And this enables this really nice model where you can create a website for free and then just scale it up as your traffic grows. And let's go ahead and see some examples of this in action. So I'm going to go back into that Windows Azure admin tool. And the same way that I can go ahead and create a new virtual machine, you'll notice I can also create a new website. So if I go ahead and just hit create, I could say SkyGoo test website. I can choose where I want to deploy it around the world and hit create. And what this is going ahead and doing is standing up a new website for me, in this case here in the eastern part of the United States. And you can see it's really fast. So it's actually now fully deployed. Go ahead and click on the SkyGoo test website, and I basically have my nice dashboard view as part of that. And what I can do then is deploy apps to it. So you'll notice I can have FTP endpoints that I can hit in order to do it. There's also this cool download publish profile link that I can click. This allows me to just set a download an XML file with some publishing settings. I could then go into something like Visual Studio, do file new project, pick a template here. It's going to use the standard ASP.NET Internet Project Template here. So it's just going to create, again, a standard vanilla, in this case here, ASP.NET web app on my local machine. And then when I want to deploy this, all I need to do is right-click on it, hit Publish on my Solution Explorer, import that settings file that I just downloaded. I can't remember what was the name of the site I created. It's got a good test website. Okay, there we go. One and hit publish. And there's a variety of other settings I could have walked through where if I wanted to upload a database as well, I could do that as part of the deployment process. And what you'll see here is now in just a few moments, I have a website that we've just created locally inside Visual Studio, uploaded into Windows Azure into that new website we just created, and it's now live in production. And so that's really how easy it is in order to get started. Create a web app, deploy it. And what the beauty is, if I ever want to make a change, so for example, if I wanted to say, hello, Azure Conf, like so, I could then redeploy it. We support what's called incremental updates. So if I wanted to, I could just preview which files are going to be uploaded as part of this process. You'll notice just one file, which is the code behind DLL for this site is going to be uploaded. And again, you can see now really fast, not only to create that site and upload it the first time, But when I want to do a subsequent upload, I only had to upload one file. It's now live. That's how quick it is. So a really, really fast way to create sites, get them going, and deploy to them. Other things that I can do that are pretty cool is I can deploy not just through Visual Studio or the command line, but I can also go ahead and deploy things. Oh, last thing I'll just show here on the site is you'll notice we also now are getting dashboard feedback. So you can see, it looks like a couple people from outside have hit that website already, and you can see my CPU time as well as my bandwidth in and out automatically already showing up as part of my website here. So a couple people asked here in terms of what are the other different ways that I can deploy? So I can use Visual Studio, I could use the command line to do it as well. I could also take advantage of something we call source control based deployment. So I'm going to say skygoog git create a new website. And so this is going to create for me now another website. And this time, instead of using Visual Studio to deploy to it, I'm going to walk through how you could use another language and use source control in order to deploy to it as well. And so to do this, I'm just going to drill into the site here. Again, you can see the same dashboard statistic. Rather than download the publishing settings or rather than using FTP, I'm instead going to go ahead and click this link here, which is called Setup Deployment from Source Control. Click that. And you'll notice here we provide a variety of different ways that you can go ahead and deploy from Source Control. You can go to something like the Team Foundation service, which is an online version of TFS that we support in the cloud. It supports both TFS Source Control as well as now Git Source Control. I could do CodePlex. I could use GitHub. I could use Dropbox. We also support Bitbucket. Or I could do what's called a local Git repository. And I can use any of these different options in order to publish my source control. And I can do this for any language. So I can do it with .NET. And we'll actually compile the C# or VB.NET project as part of that deployment. So I don't need to check in my binaries. I can just go ahead and push my source control. I can also use dynamic languages like Python, Node, or PHP. And what I'm going to do here is just take advantage of this local Git repository support. I'm going to enable that on this website. So I'm just going to push rather through a code site, but I'm just going to push it directly from my dev machine here. And let's just go ahead and create the Git bash shell. And I'm going to create a new project called AzureConf. I did a .NET project. Why don't I do something else? I'm going to do either PHP or Node. Let's do Node. So I'm just going to copy and paste in a little snippet of Hello World. And so you can see it right here. Basically, it's just saying Hello World and responding to that. I could then very easily initialize Git here. I could add that file to it. I'm going to do a commit and just say initial check-in. And it just checked it in. And then the last thing I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead here and add a remote that points to Azure. So I basically just added a remote named Azure, and I can now just say git push Azure master. And within a few seconds here, my code will be uploaded using source control, just using Git in order to point to that. You'll notice the background, the portal's already started to update, noticing, hey, there's a deployment in action. And what you should see here in just a few seconds is that the deployment is done and it's now active. And if I click the browse button, there's the project we just created with Hello World coming back. And that's how easy it was for me to create a new project, enable Git support, build a simple Node.js app, push it, and have it live. Now, if I want to make a change, I could say hello AzureConf. I could do that too. I'll just call this updated text. I do that and go back to the website. You'll notice as I'm pushing it, change is starting to take place. It's very shortly going to be done deploying. There it is. I go back here and hit refresh. The text is live. So that's how easy it is now, again, for me to go ahead, stand up source control endpoint, using a variety of different languages, a variety of different source control capabilities. We support, as I mentioned, TFS, as well as Git, as well as also recently we added Mercurial support. And again, I can use a variety of different code websites or hosting websites, whether it's TFS Online, whether it's GitHub, whether it's CodePlex or Bitbucket. So very, very flexible way for me to take advantage of all this and go ahead and create my sites. Now, in the same way that I can go ahead and get common monitoring across all these solutions, in the same way I can do source control deployment, the other cool thing that we enable out of the box is the ability for you to scale these. And so I can click the Scale tab within the portal. Right now I'm running in what's called a free tier, which allows me to basically host this site at no cost, which is great as I'm developing my site and getting it started. I can then upgrade it to what's called a shared tier, where I basically have more resources available to me, or what's called a reserve tier. And in the reserve tier model, we basically allow you to deploy these on top of virtual machines. So I'm actually running real virtual machines here. So I'll run it on, say, a medium core virtual machine. And then I could choose how many copies of those virtual machines I want to run it on. And all I need to do is just hit save, and a matter of literally moments, it'll go ahead and deploy that virtual machine so that I can go ahead and take advantage of it to use. And I can scale up and scale down literally at will. I'm only paying for the resources that I use. So the beauty here also is that if I need it for an Azure comp to scale up to a bunch, I could do that for a few hours. And then when it's over, scale it back down to a lower tier. I only have to pay for those extra resources in the hours that I needed it. So very, very flexible way that I can go ahead and really kind of get a web solution up and going as fast as possible. A couple of questions people have asked is, when is SSL support coming? Answer is very, very soon. We're going to support both SNI as well as IP address-based SSL. And so you'll be able to associate that with any of your sites. With the IP address-based SSL, obviously you'll have a separate IP address per site. So that also lets you do kind of full mapping. Even before the SSL support, we do support already the ability to do both CNAME as well as A record mapping to your websites. So if you want to have www.skygoo.com or skygoo.com and map it to your website, we support that today already. One of the nice things about this is the way that you can actually build your front end using this capability. And if I wanted to, then I can talk to my virtual machines on the back end to use the capability as well. So if I wanted to, I could use this for my web front ends. And if I wanted to host my own MySQL database or Mongo or Cassandra or whatever solution I wanted to, I could spin up virtual machines and use those within there as well. And so that this ability to kind of take the best of the IaaS world, the best of the PaaS world, and intermix them is, again, we think a really key differentiator for Windows Azure and something that's pretty special. Couple other questions here. Gary asked a question, can we set up the deploy for website from a specific branch or Git repo, or does it always have to come from master? Good question. If you go to the configure tab, you can scroll down here, you can control settings like which .NET version or PHP version you want to use. And one of the things you'll notice here is we do support both the Git deployment as well as which branch you want to use. So if I want to instead deploy from staging for this particular website, I could do that, hit save, and then we'll go ahead and only pull from that particular branch. So lots of flexibility in how we do the source control deployment. Other question Chris asked, which is it possible to have environmental differences in web.config files applied during Git deployment to Azure? Good question, Chris. We do support the ability for you to have deployment scripts so that you can actually do environmental differences or final kind of fix-ups as you do part of your deployment. So that is something that we support and something you can take advantage of. Let's see, other questions. Another question was, when deploying a website running on Windows Azure websites with WordPress, is it possible to manage the MySQL database that's created? Good question. Right now, if you use our standard WordPress template, I don't know how much MySQL management support we give you. What we do support, though, and I'll talk a little bit later on in this talk, is something we call the Windows Azure Store, and that does give you full MySQL management support. So that is something that that you can do in order to get admin support for MySQL as part of that. So, move on a little bit, but that's a little bit about websites. And again, the nice thing about the way this model works is, if you want to, you can deploy into this free tier, where it's running in what we call a shared mode, where you have multiple websites sharing the same set of physical machines. And then if you want to, you can go ahead and scale up into the reserve tier. where you basically are the only person using a particular virtual machine under the covers. And this makes sure that you have full isolation and full scalability support. And as I showed earlier, you can scale it up and scale it down pretty much at will in a very flexible way to add and remove resources as you need them. Other cool thing you can do when you're running in reserve mode is you can have multiple websites running in each reserved instance. So this is a pretty nice option. A lot of people ask, well, you know, if I have 10 websites, how much is it going to cost? You only need to have one reserved instance, and then you can put all 10 websites within that. So you're not having to pay 10 times a reserved instance. You're only paying the reserved instance once, and then adding all those websites into it. So it enables a lot of flexibility for you to do it. And the beauty here is when you're using the reserved instance, again, only your websites are running inside those virtual machines. You're isolated from any other customer. So that's a little bit about web. I want to talk now a little bit about mobile. And this is another example of where we've taken a pretty common pattern, which is building mobile backends for web for mobile devices, and turned it into a nice kind of platform abstraction that you can use in order to get a lot of productivity out and focus much more on building your app as opposed to having to worry about the infrastructure behind it. And the way we did this was by creating a new service that we launched last fall called Windows Azure Mobile Services. And this really enables you to easily build cloud backends that you can use across any type of device. So in other words, you can take a Windows 8 client, a Windows Phone client, an iPad or iPhone or iOS app, an Android client, and recently we added HTML5 support with cores so that you can actually just build a vanilla HTML site and target this cloud mobile backend as well. And what we enable you to do is store data inside this backend, so you can have per user or per app data that you easily access and use using REST APIs. You can integrate identity management into the solution, so you could have in your mobile app, you can prompt someone to log in using a Microsoft ID or a Twitter ID or a Facebook ID or a Google ID or some other ID mechanism, and we basically provide a nice OAuth way for you to do that and integrate all that on the backend. And then we support what are called push notifications, so that when from the back end something changes, you can fire using the native operating system capability, a push notification that'll, in the case of Windows, show a tile, in the case of iOS, a message that'll come down, and you can integrate that as part of the device app. And then we also support what are called background jobs with mobile services. And what those enable you to do is you can run things in the background, like every 15 minutes or every minute if you want to, where you have a little bit of code that's doing something that is not in response to a user request, but which can access all the data, can fire off push notifications, or can fetch other data and update the system in the background for you. And the beauty is it's really simple to do all this stuff, and mobile services makes it kind of a really elegant way for you to consume it. So what you can do is you can start off with any existing iOS, Windows, or Android, or HTML app that you want. You just create a mobile service inside our portal, and then you can take advantage of data ID, as well as these custom scripts, in order to fire messages back to that app pretty much at will in a really easy way. So let's see this in action. I'm going to go into our Azure portal here. And in the same way that I could go ahead and say new website or virtual machine, I can now say new mobile service and very easily create one of those. So I just walk through a couple of these settings. I'm going to show you here a service that I've already created, which is called the My To-Do app. And one of the things you'll notice here is when you first create it, we have a bunch of great tutorials that we show you that walk you through for Windows Store, Windows 8, iOS, Android, and HTML, how you can basically take an existing app and integrate it with just only a few steps. So for example, if you're building a Windows 8 app, just copy, you know, download this assembly, install our SDK, copy and paste this line of code into your app, and then just with one or two lines of code, you can start now sending data back and forth between it and Windows Azure. Likewise, if you're building, say, an iOS app, you could take inside Xcode, we have instructions, copy this framework library into it, add an import statement, here's the code to kind of register the endpoint, and then here's what would be the Objective-C code necessary in order to save and retrieve that data from your iOS app in Objective-C on an iPhone or iPad device against this Windows Azure backend. So really easy way to get started and a pretty nice model there. So I've got an existing app that I've already been working on. I'm going to open it up here. That'll kind of show you what it looks like. In fact, let's just run it here. It's called My To-Do List. And what this is doing is it's just going to bring for me a personalized to-do list that tells me what I need to do today. And I can add new items, which is give keynote talk. And when I do this, it just saved it back into Azure. So all the data here is being stored in Azure, and I have a nice little Windows 8 app that's just retrieving the data and updating the data and let me work on it on top of this device. So the way I built this, if I go back into Visual Studio here, is pretty easily. I am representing each to-do item using a class called item that has two properties, one called ID and one called text. This is that code that I showed just a moment ago that I copy and paste in, which registers this app with my back-end service. You'll notice here, as part of the login of the app, I am logging in this case here using Windows Live and getting an authentication token. And then every time I add a new item, all I need to do is just create an item, set the property on it. I'm saying mobile service.getTableItem, insert the item. And then I just refresh my items view once it comes back. And you'll notice here I'm using the await keyword syntax that we added as part of the new version of C# and the new version of .NET and VS. So I can do this all asynchronously on the client. And that's pretty much all the code I need to write in order to have a very basic Hello World to-do app being created. So if I go back into the Windows Azure portal, you'll notice here, if I click on the dashboard, I can see some information around how many requests are happening. So you can see I kind of tested this app last night, as well as more recently some of the traffic that's happening. Very similar view to what you saw already with websites and with virtual machines. Mobile services also has a nice data view or data tab that I can click on. So you can see here if I drill into my items table here, here is that give keynote talk that showed up as part of that. I can also, optionally if I want to, set it up so that I can run scripts on the server side every time something gets inserted or deleted from the database. So notice here I can do insert, update, delete, and read operations. One cool thing I'm doing right now when I insert a new item is I basically am just writing a little bit of helper code to go get an image from Bing to see are there any images relative similar to the item that I just added. And if there is, I'm basically just pushing out a push notification to that user to all their devices saying, you know, update the tile running inside, in this case, Windows 8 with a picture of that image. And what that means here is go back to my to-do list. If I said something like Seattle and hit add, that just fired a message into my backend, and bing, you can see this to-do list item just updated with an image of Seattle. If I went back here and said something like Azure, notice the tile just updated with the Windows Azure logo. So that's a simple example there where I, you know, literally only a few lines of code, I was able to send that data to the server. And then on the server, just basically writing a little bit of server-side JavaScript using Node here, I was able to actually reach out to Bing, grab an image based on the term, and then fire, again, with only a couple lines of code, a simple message to all of my devices. So if I had a phone or I had another tablet or a PC, it would also get an update of that tile. And add some nice interactivity to it. So a really easy way for me to integrate data. I could, to do the push notifications, all I need to do is write that one line of code that you just saw, and then I just paste in my secret key for whether it's Windows, Apple, or Google in the case of Android. I can integrate identity management providers. So in this case here, I use Microsoft ID, but I could do Facebook and Twitter and Google as well for login. The scheduler, someone asked a question about scheduling. I could create a scheduled job, so I could say, do a job of background lookups every 15 minutes. And then what I could do is basically just write a script that runs, and Azure Mobile Services will make sure that it runs every 15 minutes and actually performs operations. And the beauty about all this stuff is we provide a free tier, so you can do all your development absolutely at no cost. You can even go into beta and have people try out the app at no cost. And then when you do want to scale it up and you want more capability, just click on the Scale tab and you can go into Reserve mode. And then you can just choose how many virtual machines you want to take advantage of, and you can scale up your back-end resources. So a really, really easy way to build your back-ends. Again, target any device that you want to it, Start for free and then scale as you need to. Kevin asked a question, can you use the job scheduler functionality not only for mobile but also for websites? We don't have that built in today, although you could certainly build a job scheduler that inside a mobile service that simply called your website. So that's a kind of a nice way you can make that work immediately. We are looking to add, though, the scheduled task capability to websites in the future as well. So you'll be able to do that in a nice integrated way as well. Serge asked a question, can we back up the server-side scripts that I write inside there? The answer is yes. We do provide not only the ability to edit using the portal, but also the ability to edit using the command line. And so you can download and upload scripts that way. You're also going to see in the not too distant future a few other options for how you can go ahead and manage those scripts and take advantage of it. Darren asked a question, are mobile services backed by Node.js? We actually do use Node.js for some of the server extensibility today. We're also looking to add ASP.NET Web API support in the future, and so you'll be able to build your backends using any variety of different technologies. Other thing that we support for mobile that we shipped in January in preview form that you can integrate, and you can use this either with Azure Mobile Services or as a standalone feature, is something we call Notification Hub support. This is a pretty cool feature that is very useful when you're building an app where you have lots of users and you potentially want to send lots of notifications to lots of different users and you want to have a clean way to manage that. The way mobile notification hubs work is it basically allow a device or your backend app to register different devices using within a notification hub. And as you do this registration, you can indicate a tag like breaking news or scores or stock prices that you want to associate that registration with. And you can have any number of users or devices connect with this notification hub. So I could have a million devices all registered for breaking news. What's nice then is anytime you want to fire a message, instead of you having to keep track of all of those million devices, you can instead just fire one REST call to the notification hub and say, I want to send this message to anyone that's subscribed to breaking news. And then the notification hub will automatically handle deploying that push notification to all those different devices. And the nice thing here is you can see we integrate with the Apple as well as the Windows and soon the Google push notification service so that you can go ahead and take advantage of this natively from any type of app device, whether it's iOS, Windows, or Android. And then they'll actually deliver it to those users. So you can use this for live tiles. You can, again, use this for iOS or Android push features as well. And the beauty here is it makes it much simpler for you to build an app where you want to enable immediate feedback to lots of users without you having to manage all that infrastructure yourself. Again, the beauty is you can use this not only from Windows Azure Mobile Services, but you can also use this from cloud services, websites, or VMs as well. John asked a question, any update on when you're going to be able to use this from Windows Azure Mobile Services? Turns out you can actually use it today. We do actually have the script support so you can do this today, although you have to manually integrate it. You'll see, I think, in the next update of Mobile Services, a little bit more integrated support so that one of those tabs, for example, within the portal on a mobile service will let you directly integrate with this as well. So that's a little bit about mobile services some of the things you can do there. The last kind of compute option I'm going to talk quickly about is something we call cloud services. And this is basically, this is actually the original Windows Azure compute model that we supported at the very beginning of Windows Azure 2 years ago. And this basically allows you to build infinitely scalable apps and services. So it's a very, very powerful mechanism that enables you to build apps that in some cases here can be millions of different devices pounding on them at the same time, scaled across tens of thousands of VMs. So very, very flexible kind of model that lets you kind of scale to that. And in fact, if you look at, for example, our website and our mobile services model, they're actually layered on top of our underlying cloud services infrastructure. And so it kind of composes very nicely. And so cloud services lets you, if you want to, have full power of the core compute model. And then you can use websites and mobile services. If you're building a web or mobile app, we think it kind of provides a nice abstraction that kind of makes it even more tailored to those experiences. So the nice thing about cloud services, it supports multi-tier environments. You can have both front ends and back ends all coordinated as part of a single deployment. And it enables kind of very rich application management. And I'm going to show a quick demo of this in action and talk about that a little bit more. So what I could do here is I could go back to that web app that we deployed using our website model that was called Hello Azure Conf. And if I want to, I could still deploy this as a website, or alternatively, I could use this cloud service model to add a few more features to it as well. And converting a website into a cloud service is really easy. All I need to do is just right-click on it and say, add a Windows Azure Cloud Service project to it. And when I do that, it's going to go ahead and add into my Visual Studio solution. There was my web project. Here is now an extra project we call an Azure project, which has a little bit of extra metadata and options that are available. Right now, I just have a web tier here. If I wanted to, I could also right-click, and I could say, let's add what's called a worker tier. And so I'm going to say I want to have a background service. I think I'm going to add as well into this. And so you can see here now, there's my background service. And so I have now two projects within my solution, one my web tier, and then my background service is a non-UI worker role. And this basically lets me do background operations if I wanted to. You can see here the default is just to run and loop forever, actually loop forever and sleep for 10 seconds at a time. But if I wanted to, for example, do something in the background and process it, a worker role is a really great, easy way to do that. And now I have a single solution and a single deployment option that I can use in order to actually deploy both up into Windows Azure. I could, as part of that deployment, choose what size VMs I want to use. So I could say I want 400 VMs here, and I want them all to be extra large. If I needed that, I'm going to change that so that I don't get billed for that. Or I can just say here, one small, and so forth. And then all I need to do is just right-click, hit publish, and just like you saw with websites, I can now walk through deploying this cloud service up into the cloud. But the nice thing in here is instead of it just being a single tier, or single web, or single mobile, I can now have multiple of these tiers, lots of different web and worker roles, all composed together into a single deployment solution that I can go ahead and run. So, under the covers when I do that and deploy that app, one of the things that Azure will go ahead and do is basically package up that app, or what Visual Studio is going to upload what's called a service package, which is a kind of zip file that has all the tiers of the app as well as the metadata. Windows Azure will then take it, find locations within the data center in order to run that application. Under the covers, it'll create virtual machines for you and deploy your code within them. And then basically, once it's finished deploying it, it'll wire up a load balancer and all the infrastructure necessary in order to run it and make it live on the web. And the nice thing about this is if I create multiple instances of this, it'll automatically handle load balancing the traffic across them. It also is smart so that if one of the instances, for example, has a problem, it can automatically spin up a new instance while it's out of rotation. And then once it's completed and back in rotation, it'll wire up and send the traffic to it again. And the beauty about all this is you don't have to write any code to do it. The underlying cloud service mechanism supports all those primitives in order to do the healing of your app for you. And so again, that now allows you to write a lot less infrastructure code and get a lot of benefits out of it. Other things that we provide as part of cloud services, the ability to upgrade your apps in a graceful way. So if you have a very large deployment of, say, thousands of VMs, you often, when you want to do an upgrade, you can't take the app down typically in a services world. How do you kind of roll through and make those updates? Cloud services has a nice model to enable that. It also provides a staging environment. So if you want to test something before it's completely live, you can get a staging URL that you can hit, and then you can effectively swap it into production in a very graceful way. So lots of different options that you can take advantage of and makes it very flexible. When it comes to management then, just like you saw earlier with websites and with virtual machines, I can very easily manage cloud services inside the Azure portal or through the command line. I can go in here and very easily drill into one of my deployment units here. And you'll see I'll get diagnostic information, in this case here CPU information about how a VM that I deployed a little bit earlier is running. I can drill in and add additional monitoring statistics to it. If I wanted to, I could scale up the number of instances I can use. And we have some customers that literally scale up to 10,000 instances overnight and then scale them down to just basically zero during the day. They do a bunch of financial processing for banks and things like that. And the nice thing about this cloud service model is this ability to kind of scale up and scale down in a very elastic way ends up being sort of super flexible and something that can really save you a bunch of time. So one of the things that I've talked a little bit about with this sort of platform as a service model that we've kind of support with Windows Azure is this notion of enabling you to focus on your apps and not have to worry about the infrastructure. And hopefully you've seen this with websites, mobile services, and now cloud services. We've really spent a lot of time so that as you're writing your code, how do we provide you a nice way that you can fall into what I'll call the pit of success as opposed to the pit of failure, where we have nice best practices, we have nice ways that we already integrate with source control, that we already handle scaling, that we already handle load balancing, and you can really focus on app and your apps and delivering value to your customers without having to worry about all the mechanics and infrastructure necessary to make that happen. The other thing we do as part of that, this sort of focus on apps, not infrastructure, is also then enable you not just to write arbitrary code that you want and deploy in Azure, but also to use some of the built-in services that we already have built that you can call from those apps, regardless of whether those apps are running in VMs, running Windows or Linux, running as websites, mobile services, or cloud services. And these application building blocks can be used from all of those. And so we have, for example, a database solution. So instead of you having to create a VM and create a database within it, you can actually just go in the portal and say, give me a database, and we handle deploying the VM for you, we handle running it for you, we even handle backup for you, without you having to worry about it. Likewise, if I want to stand up a Hadoop cluster so that I could do big data analysis, you can use our virtual machine support and manually do that yourself, or you can now just go into the portal and say, give me a new Hadoop cluster of this many nodes, and we'll stand it up for you, and you just supply the data and the MapReduce jobs to run on it. And there's a variety of other kind of capabilities here that I'll go into more detail on in the next couple slides. But in general, you know, one of the really nice things about Azure is the fact that we have lots of these built-in services, and you can use them from all types of compute options, whether it's Windows or Linux, whether it's VMs or PaaS. And you're going to see this list get richer and richer in the months and years ahead. So let's walk through a couple examples of this. Let's start with kind of a very basic one that I think most people build any type of apps care about, which is a database. And so we have a really nice way that you can easily create a relational SQL Server engine in the cloud. You can do it inside a VM, so if you just want to manually manage it yourself, you can do that. But we also have this nice SQL database option with Azure, which is a managed solution where instead of having to, again, worry about all the mechanics, I can just say, give me a database, and you can have it stood up in pretty much no time at all. And we're handling managing the infrastructure to run it. So to do that, let's just go back into our Azure portal here. Same way that I could say new website, VM, mobile service, cloud service, I could also go new data service, and I could go ahead and create a SQL database. And so I just quickly create it, and I might say the Scott Goo test DB. I can choose to run it on a server. I could create a new endpoint somewhere if I wanted to. And all I need to do is just hit create database, and in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's done. That was well timed. As you can see, basically here in about 5 seconds, I got a new database. I can click here on SQL databases. Here's the one I just created, and I have a database ready to be used. So I can click on the dashboard. Same way that you saw with cloud services and mobile services, a bunch of diagnostic information. Here I now have, you know, how many deadlocks, how many failed connections, how many successful connections. I can add that into the list in a very easy way. And I can basically get my connection strings in a variety of different languages. So I could see it in .NET or Java or ODBC. I'm good to go. I could also, if I wanted to, export it or import a database. So for example, if I wanted to take an existing backpack file from a SQL Server on-premise, I can go ahead and upload it. I can also go ahead and download it. Other things I could do if I wanted to scale it, by default the SQL database is just 1 gig in size. If I want to, I can just go ahead and scale it up to say 150 gigs in size, hit save, and in about 5 to 10 seconds, there we go. About 5 seconds there, I've now scaled my database up to be 150 gigs in size. That's how easy it was to scale up or scale down. Now, the beauty also about how this works is I'm only paying for what I'm using. And so, again, if I go to the Azure.com website here, click on pricing, click on data services, click on SQL database, one of the things you'll notice is by default, if I'm just using under 100 megs, I'm only paying $4.99 a month. If I'm using a gig of full data, I'm going to pay $9. And so I'm only basically paying for the data that I'm using. I'm not actually having to ever buy a SQL license in this model. So I'm only literally paying for what I'm using. And these are monthly charges, not hourly charges. So, you know, I basically get a full relational database that I can use at very low rates. And then it just sort of scales up nicely. And again, if I do my 6 or 12 month plan, I can get additional discounts that are pretty steep on top of that base pay-as-you-go rate. So I can get even additional discounts that I can use. So really easy way to get started with a database, scale it up, scale it down, pay only for what you use. And I can manage it through the portal here. I could also just take the standard SQL Server Management Studio, point it at this, and go ahead and program it as well. So very easy way for me to take advantage of and use. Now, the SQL database support doesn't have everything that's in the full SQL Server. So there are some more advanced features of SQL Server that aren't supported in this model. But I think you'll find generally most of the core relational capabilities are all included as part of this. For most relational database apps, you can do this. But if you need analysis services or certain more advanced features, again, you can spin up a virtual machine and you can run the full vanilla SQL Server now within that and use that instead. But in general, if you can take advantage of SQL databases, I think you'll find it actually provides some really nice support and enables you to be kind of much more productive in a much more cost-effective way. So that's just one example of a managed service that we provide. Other examples of services we provide include caching support. So one of the things you often need to think about in a cloud world is when you have potentially millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of users hitting your site, how do you make it really fast? How do you not throw millions of connections against the database? Cache is a really great way to do it. We have a nice caching solution with Windows Azure that you can deploy and use today. It's an in-memory cache, so it's super low latency. It's on average about 1.2 milliseconds to read or write. And you can dynamically shrink or grow the size of the cache at will without having to redeploy your app. And it does support both high availability, meaning you can make sure that something is stored in the cache on multiple server nodes in case one goes down so you don't lose the item. We also support not only our own protocol to access the cache, but we've also added memcached support. So if you have a memcached client library or you're accessing it for, say, a Linux machine, you can access our cache still and take advantage of it using memcached. And basically the way it works with our distributed cache is you can deploy it today within web or worker roles as part of cloud services, and you can allocate a percentage of that VM memory to the cache. So in other words, if I wanted to with a cloud service, I could say, I'm not using a certain percentage of the VM memory size, I'm just going to allocate it to a cache. We'll then put all that memory together into a single, what we call ring, that allows us to aggregate that data together. So now I have a 1.2 gig cache, even though I only have 300 megs free on four VMs. Alternatively, what I can do is I can have dedicated what we call worker roles that I apply the cache to. I can then use the management portal and I can increase or decrease the size of the cache pretty much at will add or remove memory as needed. So a very powerful way for me to get some great performance wins out of it and easily manage it as part of my solution. Another cool capability I want to touch on briefly is something called the Service Bus. This is a great feature that we provide that gives you a way to do messaging within your application. So you can take advantage of things like queues or pub-sub style messaging patterns within your solutions. And it's really great at delivering what we call hybrid apps, where you might have some of your code running inside Azure and some of your code running, say, in an enterprise or an on-premises environment. And so it makes it really easy to kind of stitch those together and enable what we call loosely coupled solutions. So to kind of give an example of what the difference between a tightly coupled and a loosely coupled solution means. In a tightly coupled solution, you might build a solution where, say, for example, different parts of your app have hard dependencies on each other. So for example, I might have a web front end in my store that talks directly to a tracking service in a very synchronous way. And the downside with a tightly coupled solution is if you start to have problems in different pieces of your architecture, you can have a cascading set of failures where your tracking surface is down, you can no longer take orders, as an example, in a tightly coupled world. And that ends up being more fragile, more difficult to scale, and something we generally don't really recommend. You can do it, but we don't recommend. So what we recommend is a more loosely coupled approach with the cloud, where you can handle different failures in different places without your overall solution going down. And as an example of doing this, you can take advantage of a feature we call queuing, which we deliver both as part of Service Bus. We also support it as part of our storage system. And now, instead of directly talking to a service to do something, for example, to ship something, I would instead, as part of my front end, when someone places an order, create a message object, stick it in a queue, and then a worker on the back end would just pull from that queue, and as the messages arrive, it would process it and do something with it. And the benefit here is now, if I have a problem with my back end service, I'm not going to impact my front end or my order taking. Instead, it can continue to go ahead and send messages into that queue, and then my back end can just go ahead and pull those messages and process them at will. So it enables much more reliability. It's also really useful as a way to scale out your architecture. So now I could have multiple front ends dumping into that queue, and then I could have multiple back ends pulling from that queue and processing those messages. And you saw earlier inside the portal how I can scale up or scale down the number of websites or cloud services or worker roles within my app. The beauty here is I can keep very data-driven. I can look to see how long is my order queue. If it's growing longer, let me just spin up more workers. If it's being processed really fast, I can spin them down. And I can basically kind of do what we call load leveling, where I can increase or decrease the capabilities throughout my solution based on what I actually need. And when you add that to the kind of pay only for what you use model, you can drive a ton of cost savings out of your solution. Other nice thing about this kind of queuing approach and this pub-sub approach is it enables a really nice way that you can integrate code and apps running in Azure with code and apps running on-premise. And I'm going to show a simple example here. We're going to need some help from folks here watching live, where I'm going to basically take a mobile app that I've built and running right now inside Azure. What I want to do is enable anyone on the web to hit it. And basically, they'll see an HTML screen. You can post a message to me. And what this mobile app's going to do is simply write a few lines of code to dump this message into a service bus queue that's sitting inside Azure. And then what I'm going to do is take my laptop here, and I'm going to connect to that same service bus queue, pull the messages down, and output the messages to my command line console screen. So you'll actually see whatever you type in the browser, it will actually show up on my laptop. So it'll be nice. And the great thing, kind of example of this is an example of kind of how we're building a hybrid solution, where I've got code running in the cloud, and I've got code running on my laptop, and I can stitch them together into kind of a single kind of solution. So let's try this out. We're going to go here and show you the front end of this app. And it is right here. So it's a simple ASP.NET app. And here's what it looks like. Here's what it looks like on the web. So you can go to skygoo-message.cloudapp.net. Oops. Nope, don't do that. So there's the URL. So if you want to hit it directly yourself, please do so. Send me a message. And I can just say, "Hi, Scott." And when I do this, all I'm doing here is I'm hitting this web app. It is creating a message object, sending it into the a service bus queue, and depositing it inside that service bus. And what the code to do that looks like is right here, just an MVC controller. I basically just have a simple form post. When the post comes in, I take the message, and I just connect to the orders queue, create a message object, and I'm sending it in it. And so if I come back here, I could say another one, like so, and it's just pumping messages into the service bus. What I can then do is open a listener app. Like so. And this is just a command line console app. And all it's going to do is connect to that same service bus queue. And it's just going to loop forever, pulling messages right into my command line. And so if I go ahead and run this now, you can see, there we go, messages that are coming here. If you want to add your own message, you can. Well, lots of people watching online. Basically, what you can see here is a simple example of, on my local system, I'm able to connect to that service bus queue, pull those messages, deploy something in the cloud, and we're enabling a very nice way of kind of decoupled, loosely coupled solutions. So if my backend goes down or the network goes down, I'm not going to lose anyone's message. They were just queued up, and then as soon as it comes back online, I can go ahead and start processing them at will. So again, nice way I can connect the two in a very secure, very reliable way. And the beauty about, again, all these services, like the service bus, is I can go into the Azure portal here, and if I want to, I can go ahead and click on Service Bus. I can go ahead and manage it. You can see there is my orders. I don't know why I called it orders since I'm using it for non-order thing, but I just happen to order it there. And again, I can go ahead and scale up. I can actually control how long different messages live, and I can kind of see a window of data being stored here. In general, for this, I think it's a few minute latency before we actually show the numbers, but I basically be able to see my tracking numbers here throughout that. And if I wanted to create a new service bus queue, topic, or relay, it's really easy for me to do that. I just kind of drill in, and away I go. So really easy way to take advantage of all this stuff, a lot of cool things you can do with it. In addition to queues, we also support something we call the relay. With a relay, it's a really easy way that you can go ahead now and take services like a database or another endpoint or existing app that you already have behind the firewall and enable synchronous communication. So with a queue, I'm posting a message and I don't wait for whether or not someone's processed it. With a relay, I can actually route my web app to, for example, a database on-premise and get access to it. And in this case here, I would kind of synchronously be able to call and do that. And this enables, again, a nice way that I can integrate existing on-premise assets with code that's running in the cloud in a very secure way. So definitely check out the service bus, both queues and relays, if you want to build kind of an enterprise solution that spans both. Other examples of services that we have include media services. And this is another platform as a service-based kind of approach where I can go ahead now and upload and encode video content very easily within Windows Azure. I can also stream that video content really easily within Windows Azure. And the beauty here is I'm not having to create VMs. I'm not having to stand any of that stuff up. Azure takes care of it all for me and provides a really easy way that I can do it. Simple example of this in action. This is a feature, again, we shipped in January of this year. So it's in production. You can take advantage of it now. I have this sort of Scott Goo Media service, and I can create a new one very easily just by saying media service and quickly creating it. This one here, when you drill in, shows me a couple of cool examples for how I can programmatically do things in either C# or Java. So everything I'm about to show you through the portal, I can also just copy and paste this .NET code and do it programmatically from within an app as well. So definitely check that out if you haven't seen that. Again, it provides a similar dashboard view, just like all the other services that we've seen, so you can see different things. It supports scaling, so I have both a kind of a low-cost tier as well as dedicated jobs if I want high SLAs or guaranteed times for when certain encoding operations will occur. And then the cool thing about this from a portal experience that I kind of like is if you just want to try it out, just click on the content tab. You can then go ahead and upload video from your local computer or from blob storage. So here's a simple example here. I'm going to give this the name Scott Goo Silly Source. It's now uploading this video directly in the portal. So again, I could go back and take that C# code and I could write a C# app in order to do this instead in an automated way. But we've just finished uploading it. You can see here somewhere inside here I have my Scott Goo Silly tab, I think, or will in a second when I refresh. And so my content should be uploaded now inside here. There it is, Kaiku Silly. It's just raw format that I just uploaded. If I want to, I kick off an encoding job. So let's say I want to make this available to iOS devices or to Windows devices or Silverlight or Flash devices or just HTML5. I can do that and pick an encoding job that I want to use. Just go ahead and hit OK. And this is now going to queue off an encoder that's going to go ahead and process that media I uploaded and convert it into whatever encoding format that I wanted to. And I could use any of those preset ones, or I could also go ahead and define my own custom set of media encoding formats if I wanted to. And you can see here, it's encoding right now. I clicked on the Jobs tab, and you can see kind of the progress as it's encoding that video. And so it'll just take a few seconds in order to go ahead and do it. In fact, it looks like it might even be finished, or no, it's just still processing. This is right now using the shared tier, so we don't give you any guarantees in terms of when the encoding job will be picked up, although it's usually within about 5 minutes. You can also do this again, the scale tab, so that we guarantee that an encoding job gets done with a certain in a certain SLA time window. So if you have something that's kind of mission critical that you want to get done, you can go ahead and do that. If I go ahead now and click back on the content tab, you can see the coding content will start showing up there. Once I have something that's created, I can go ahead and very easily publish it as an endpoint that I can go ahead and view. So I can just go ahead and, for example, click publish on this. This will stand up a streaming endpoint that I can then point any device against. So we'll actually maintain a streaming server for you. You don't need to create VMs. You don't have to worry about load balancing and high availability. That's all built into the media services service. And it's something you can use. And then the beauty here is, if I want to actually go ahead and play it, I can even do it inside the portal. And you can see here a fairly ridiculous video of me from many years ago for something that some conference that I did. Anyway, and hopefully you'll never find that URL. So simple way, again, that you can go ahead and take advantage of this media services capability. Upload any format, encode it in any job, stream it to any device, again, whether it's Windows, iOS, Android, Flash, or Silverlight. Beauty here, again, is you're not having to manage your own infrastructure. We're doing it for you. So all these application building blocks I mentioned are built in. You can take advantage of them. You can do all these things today. Other cool ones I didn't have time to show today include our new Hadoop cluster jobs. You can take your logs from your website and now run MapReduce jobs against them, or take logs of data, or customer data, that you have, upload them, and now spin up big data Hadoop jobs that you can use in the cloud. We've got networking. We've got a bunch of other cool features. Definitely worth checking out. You're going to see this list get richer and richer going forward. In addition to the services that we provide, we also have what's called the Windows Azure Store, which enables you to very easily consume services from some of our partners. The beauty about this is it just added to your standard Windows Azure bill, so you don't have to give these partners a separate credit card. They just get added to your standard monthly Azure account. We've got a great set of partners that you can go ahead and consume and use today. Just go directly within the portal in order to create one. Just say new store, click that link. This will actually show you a list of a lot of these different partners. Just click. Some of them have kind of free tiers. Others kind of charge for different things. So for example, like Aspera here, you can choose how much they do data ingestion. You can choose how much you want to actually upload in terms of content. Someone asked earlier about MySQL. There's a MySQL option there. They include a free tier, so you can get up to 20 megs at no cost. And then if you want to, you can upgrade it to a richer tier. And then basically just within a few clicks, it'll go ahead and deploy again within the Azure portal. And the beauty is, if you click on our add-in, if you click on our add-on node inside the Portal Explorer, they'll show up as items here. And a cool thing about them is, not only can you actually see status about them and what's happening, you can also, if you signed up for a free tier, automatically migrate to a richer tier. So for example, just click this upgrade button, and you can go from the free to a bronze without having to redeploy your app or without having to change any of the data. So really easy way to try stuff out, really easy way to upgrade. And then the beauty is, for someone like SendGrid, which provides email support, click the manage link, and from within our portal, we'll single sign you on into one of these third-party portals. And so you can also now do your full SendGrid management directly within this as well. So a really easy way you can consume these services, just add them to your standard bill, and take great advantage of them within Windows Azure. So we've covered lots of ground, lots of capabilities. Just to kind of wrap up in terms of just from some broad meta things, it's very flexible. You can do lots of different things. It's very open. You can use any language you want in order to program against it. You can use any device or mobile client in order to, whether it's media or mobile or anything else, in order to work against it. All of our SDKs are not only in multiple languages, but they're also under an Apache 2 license and stored on GitHub. So you can also contribute patches or updates or feature requests to us directly and collaborate there. We're now available in more than 89 countries and territories. As I talked about at the beginning, you can try out Azure at no cost, no obligation. Just sign up for the free trial, and you get 90 days in order to actually use everything I just showed here. And hopefully you'll find the end result. It's very flexible, it's very open, and it's very solid. And excited to see what you do with it. I think for developers in particular, you're going to find Azure is a pretty fun way that you can get dramatically more productive and that you can actually build solutions that reach an even broader audience. And looking forward to seeing some of the solutions that you build. So we got lots more content here today. This is just the kickoff, kind of providing an overview. Stay tuned for even more live events and live talks, as well as there's variety on demand. If you can't watch everything live today, the good news is we are recording it, so it will be available for you to watch after the fact, and then use this live chat capability that's right below the viewer, where you can ask any of the presenters live questions as you go. So looking forward to seeing what you build with Azure. Hope you have a great time with it. Thanks so much.